Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us today for episode 21 of Pepperdine People. I'm Jerry Rushford, Professor of Church History and Director of Church Relations, and I'm joined today by Dr. Leonard Allen, who is the editor and publisher of ACU Press and Leafwood Publishing, who's back on our campus. Leonard, welcome back to Pepperdine.
Thanks. It's great to be here, Jerry.
You come a lot. You're on the Bible lectures every year, and I don't know how any guess how many times you've been here through the years?
Oh, I think it started back in the mid to late 80s, so yeah. Probably 20-something years.
For a quarter century, you've been coming. And I probably got your title wrong. I don't know what you do with ACU. I said editor and publisher. What is it?
Oh, I guess the proper title is director and editor-in-chief at Abilene Christian University Press. Yeah.
And then Leafwood Publishing is really the company you founded.
Right, in the year 2000, and then it merged with Abilene Christian University Press in 2005 and has become one of their imprints.
So you're directing both.
Right.
And yesterday I saw you in the audience in Elkins Auditorium for the event called Great Communion, which was a unique event. And I just wonder what you thought of it. Is it good for schools like Pepperdine University to have – events like this? What did you think of it?
Yeah, it was a great event, a unique event. This was part of the Great Communion services that were held all around the nation and the world yesterday, particularly for the Stone Campbell Heritage commemorating the 200th anniversary of Thomas Campbell's declaration and address, one of the two founding documents of the American Restoration Movement. And in this communion service, it was the attempt to bring together people from all three of the major branches of the movement to share fellowship and to reaffirm our commitment to some of the ideals of the movement as Thomas Campbell had expressed them. So I thought that for Pepperdine, since it values its heritage in the Restoration Movement, it was appropriate to host this here and for the University Church to be the hosts.
I thought the service was beautifully crafted, the combination of readings, reading the 13 propositions from Campbell, the scripture readings, the songs, the celebration of the Lord's Supper. It really was a moving event. And when everyone joined hands at the end and that closing song, I was touched by it. I enjoyed meeting people that I'd never met before from other congregations in the area. And then you're going to sort of link with that tonight. You're on campus to give the annual William M. Green Distinguished Christian Scholar Lecture. This lecture program I established 30 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been that long. I made my decision to establish it when I preached Dr. Green's funeral. And I started it the next year. And now here we are at the 30th year of the William Green Lectures. I assume you probably know most of the people who've given lectures. Did I send you a list of all those?
Yes.
It's been a great series. Tell me what you're doing tonight for the 30th annual lecture.
Well, since it is the bicentennial season of the Thomas Campbell's declaration and address, I'm addressing that document as an American Christian classic and trying to introduce it to some, I'm sure, who will not have heard of it. But then I'm trying to do some what I'm going to do at the heart of the lecture is look at how three different people throughout the heritage have interpreted this document. One of them will be Robert Richardson in the 1850s.
Right.
One will be Frederick Doyle Kirshner in the 1920s. He was a moderate disciple, educator, and theologian who was in dialogue, beginning dialogue with the larger ecumenical movement at that time. And he has a small book-length interpretation of this document that I've drawn on. And then the third person I'm looking at is L.L. Briggins, who represents the Churches of Christ and their view of this document, which comes from 1939. And his treatment – he did 14 articles in the Gospel Advocate on this document which is the longest treatment of this document by anyone I can find in Churches of Christ. And he's giving us a very interesting assessment of this document, quite of a mixed assessment, shall we say.
I would have guessed the first two, Richardson and Kirshner. You're surprising me with Briggins. When you said three, I assumed you were going to do Doug Foster from our own age, because Doug has done a lot of study in it. Well, I'm anxious to hear what you're going to say about Briggins. Tonight we're going to have a dinner of church leaders from the area, and then they will come down to hear you lecture. I think we'll have a good time. When I first met you, Leonard, you had used that PhD from the University of Iowa in what was it, in church history?
American history church? Of Christian thought.
History really. Of Christian
history
thought.
History of theology.
You had used that to pave the way to an academic career at Abilene Christian University, and you were a professor. Why did you give that up to go into this world of Christian publishing?
Well, it was an unexpected journey, really. When I moved to California in the year 1999 for my wife to do her PhD at Talbot School of Theology, and we both taught at Biola, I just had the idea of beginning a publishing project, really for Churches of Christ, some things I thought that could be more cutting edge, more interesting, more provocative than we were getting. That there was an opening there for some things. Mm-hmm. So, kind of on the side, I began publishing some books in the year 2000, and it kind of took off in ways I didn't really expect, and began to devote more and more of my time to it. So, when we moved to Northwest Arkansas for my wife to become professor at John Brown University, I told her that her career was on the front burner, and I would go wherever she felt called to go. So we moved there, and I continued working with Leif Wood and doing adjunct teaching at that university and others. It just kept getting to be more and more time-consuming that I needed to somehow either hire people to help me or do something different. And so began conversation with Abilene Christian about a merger, them basically buying Leif Wood, and they did, and talked me into becoming the director of the new entity.
What was the first name for your company? It wasn't Leif Wood.
It was New Leaf Books.
Okay, I'd forgotten.
That's
that.
Right. New and Leaf. It was that for about 2 years. But I realized that there was another Christian publishing company that had changed its name to New Leaf Publishers just a few months before I began Leaf Wood.
Oh, wow.
And an attorney advised me to change the name, so I chose Leif Wood because it had some recognizable continuity with the previous name but was different. So.
Yeah. And Holly, your wife, her position at John Brown is what?
She's a professor in the Bible department there and directs a program, oversees a degree program in children's and family ministry.
Yeah.
And so she teaches her central courses are on the spiritual development of children. Which
now,
is her major.
Was that a good move for her? Has she enjoyed
She's flourished there. She enjoys her teaching. She's become kind of a star there at John Brown with her research and her teaching, and was recently awarded a Faculty of the Year award there at the school. So,
and now when she taught for me last year or the year before, it was a new book that she had just published. Right.
It was she edited a large book of material that was sort of drawn out of the National Conference on Children's Spirituality in Chicago in 2007. The book came out about a year and a half ago, and was entitled Nurturing Children's Spirituality.
Yes.
It had a concluding chapter by John Westerhoff, the well-known educator.
And
it's an excellent book.
Let me talk about your books. Do you have any idea how many you've written? Do you keep track of the number?
Maybe somewhere in the area of 8 or 9 or 10, somewhere in there.
It seems more than that, but maybe that. And then you've had chapters in books, and
right.
and you've co. Then you've been co-author with Richard Hughes of at least two. That
three.
I think
three books.
Well, of all those books, I once asked my professor Elton Trueblood at the Earlham School of Religion. He had written 34 books, and I asked him which book he would most want to be judged by. So let me ask you that question. If I was to say of all your writings, which one would you most want to be judged by? Which one would it be?
Well, that's always a difficult question, I think, for an author. But I would say it was the book, the 1988 book called Discovering Our Roots, The Ancestry of Churches of Christ, that I co-authored with Richard Hughes. I say that because I think that book has had maybe more staying power than any other book. It's still used in college classes. And just today, I met with a dozen Pepperdine staff and faculty who are reading that book, and they had invited me to come and just let them question me about it.
That was today?
Today, yeah.
And where was that luncheon?
In the faculty dining room.
And how many, 10 or 12?
10 or 12 are reading this book through the Center for Faith and Learning here.
Yeah.
And they decided to begin their three or four sessions with me today.
So, now, how many of that 10 or 12 have roots in the Stone Campbell movement?
I would think almost all of them did. And I had several I had never met before. One of them, one of the new philosophy professors here, told me how much that book had meant to him as he was growing up and as he was wrestling with his own heritage and his own faith. Mm-hmm. I'd never met him before today. And so that was I guess that I've gotten the most response over these last 21 years from that book, people saying how much it has meant to them to open up windows on such a larger and heritage and one they can feel proud of and sense that they can own in new ways, and it's been a healthy thing for them. So I think for that reason, I would say point to that book because of that long impact that it seems to have had.
The book Distant Voices, mm-hmm. I know is you would probably say, well, that's not a great example of my best writing. Those were lectures you gave at church that were printed. But for sheer delight, I have used that several times in courses just because the windows you open there on women in the church and some issues, long-forgotten issues, and you just treated areas of the movement that were diverse and stimulating, and that's one that has really helped me. And I know it's probably not one of the best written, but
well, I would have that as a pretty close second to the other one, just in terms of response. I've gotten probably almost as much response from that book from just really rank and file people saying, I really enjoyed reading that, and it really opened my eyes to a lot of new things, and it stirred lots of thought. And so in terms of response from just rank-and-file church members, I've gotten as much from that probably as from any other thing as well.
Is it still in print?
It is in print. I think it's in its fifth printing right now. Yeah.
And the other one about discovering
our roots,
is that still in print?
It is. It's in 2006, we put a new cover on the book. The press put a new cover on the book, and it's sort of updated.
So it's been reprinted.
It's been reprinted probably six or seven or eight times, and it has editions now in Korean and Japanese and Portuguese.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What about the book, The Contemporaries Meet the Classics on Prayer? I have that one sitting on a side table in my living room. Was that a part of a series?
That was a series, I think a short-lived series that Howard Publishing did on different Christian biblical topics. I'm not sure they did over two or three in the series actually. The Contemporaries Meet the Classics. It's an anthology of selections from Christian writers on prayer. And I kind of call this book ranging from Martin Luther to Max Lucado.
Oh, okay. Now, did that sell well?
It did sell well. I think it was in hardback, maybe 10,000 copies or more. I don't know how many. I know at least that many.
And then there was one on prayer, and what were the others on? Was one on
One on the Holy Spirit.
Holy Spirit.
That Randy Harris did. But beyond that, I'm not sure if they did anymore.
Yeah. Now, you're publishing books, and I know you're having a great time doing that. Tell me some of your favorites. What have you put out in the last decade that you're particularly proud of?
Okay. Well, let me say first that we have two main imprints now. That we have the ACU Press imprint, which is more scholarly and academic, and we have the Leafwood imprint, which is books for churches and for a broader Christian audience. Three Leafwood books that form a trilogy I'm particularly pleased with. This was the three books on the Stone Campbell ordinances. You know, the first one was on the Lord's Supper by John Mark Hicks called Come to the Table. And then the next one was on baptism.
Those were the two that we thought were the only two ordinances. So I couldn't wait to hear what the third one was.
That's right. That book was by John Mark and Greg Taylor. And the third ordinance is the Lord's Day or the Christian Assembly. And this was a book that John Mark Hicks got two of his former students to help him write, and that is Bobby Valentine and I just went blank on the third one. But anyway, those are very substantive books that deal both biblically, theologically, and historically with these three Christian practices. Mm. And they've sold very well for books of that depth and substance, and I think they've had quite an impact.
They really have. That's a good series. The Lord's Day was all new material to me. The kind of things they quoted from, that was opening doors I had never studied. I think they've sold well here at the Bible
Institute. That's right. Johnny Melton was the third author of that third book. Yeah. On the ACU Press side, we've begun a new series of books on and for Christian higher education. And one of those books was called The Soul of a Christian University, a Field Guide for Educators. And it's a book designed to introduce new faculty and professional staff at faith-based colleges to the world of living and working at a Christian university. And it's been used by just dozens and dozens of Christian college faculty reading groups. And some schools have bought it for their whole faculty these last 2 years. And
so it's just been out 2 years.
It's been about just 2 years. And I've been very pleased with it.
Now, is ACU using it since they're publishing it?
Some, but not as much as I would hope.
Yeah.
Not as much as some of the schools like Indiana Wesleyan and Gordon College and places like that.
Yeah. The Transforming Word volume, is that the biggest thing you've attempted?
That's the biggest thing. In fact, that's the biggest thing that one could publish. It just in terms of the publishing process, you might like to know that that book is as thick as any North American bindery can bind.
Is that right?
So it's about 1,136 pages. Weighs 7 pounds, and I tell people that it is cheaper per pound to buy this book than ribeye steak, and it lasts a lot longer.
How many years did it take to put that
out? I think that book was about close to 9 years in production, writing and production.
Wow. You were with it the whole 9 years?
No.
It started
I took over in midstream, and it was already well down the road when I took over, but it was stalling in some ways and had some difficulties, and it was quite a challenge to get this on track and get it finished. Mark Hamilton, ACU Old Testament professor, was the general editor, and he did a heroic job over those years bringing this to fruition.
Well, I've sure enjoyed using mine. It's an outstanding volume. As I said in one of the blurbs I sent to you for the dust jacket, just the opening articles, how many, 13, 14 articles?
13. Mm-hmm.
Was worth the book.
Yeah.
Reading Everett Ferguson on the canon or Tom Albright on Old Testament theology, New Testament theology, the chapter on music and the history of Christianity. Boy, those were great. Has it sold well or are you pleased?
Yeah. I'm very pleased. I mean, I would say – and we just sold 600 copies of it to Books A Million. That's going to be having it in their stores all around the nation.
Oh, yeah. I go in those.
And we're hoping to have some in Lifeway here shortly and some other of the chain stores.
How does that work to get in Books A Million? Do you contact them or do they contact
you? No, we contact them. We have one of our staff that actually goes to Florida and meets with them and shows them some of our books and tries to persuade them to stock them. So we're pleased, very, very pleased with that. And, you know, I would say we'd probably sell out the first printing this next year. So
tell me some things that are not out yet, but they're in the planning stages.
Okay.
What's coming? Any that you're really pretty eager to get out?
Yeah. Let me mention some on both sides, ACU Press and Leafwood. In line with our higher education emphasis with ACU Press, we're doing a book this spring called Transformations at the Edge of the World, which is a book I know you would like. It's a book that it's an edited volume that has about 15 different people talking about the study abroad program that their school uses, ranging from inner city to third world to Rome to Italy and different kinds of focus that these have. And with the overall theme being how do these study abroad programs of this diverse type, how do they all contribute to the spiritual shaping of college students?
Wow.
So
I didn't know that was coming out. That will be very good.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. And let me mention a very unusual book that ACU Press has just recently agreed to publish. It's being pulled together, put together by Mark Shipp at the Austin Graduate School of Theology. It's on the Psalms. It'll eventually be a three-volume work. This is the first volume covering Book 1 of the Psalms, which is 1 through 42. And again, there's no book like this that any of us are aware of. It'll have a new translation of the psalm by an Old Testament scholar. Mm-hmm. It'll have a brief commentary on that psalm. And then it will have 1 to 3 new, brand new songs taken from that psalm.
Wow.
With the music, four-part music to sing. And some of these songs will be more traditional in their flavor and some will be more contemporary in their flavor. There will be lyricists and composers who are working together on these. There's a 15-group committee that meets every 3 or 4 months to sing these songs and try to improve them. So it'll be a book of fresh translation, commentary, and songs.
Wow.
And these songs will be offered to the church to begin working into their worship.
Mark is coming this year to the Pepperdine Bible Lectures in May 2010 to teach a class on this. And he's asked that I provide him with the quartet from St. Petersburg, Russia. Salome, mm-hmm. Is that their?
Yes.
Constantine Zagulin.
He's written a number of these new songs himself, the music.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Constantine, I think, was a composer before he became a Christian.
That's right.
I mean, he's a fairly recent convert. I mean, 10, 15 years since the wall came down.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have Mark Shipp teaching, and they're going to be singing these songs. But we don't have a book yet, do we?
No. It'll take quite a bit of production work to do a book like this. And then eventually, hopefully in maybe 3 to 5 years, the whole Psalter will be covered this way in a three-volume set.
Boy, that is exciting. That's wonderful.
And then on the Leafwood side, let me mention one or two things quickly. Let's see. I just went – the one I was going to mention, I just went blank on. We have coming out in early next year a book honoring the memory of Prentice Metter Jr.
Oh, yes.
And this book will bear – this will be the first – kind of a new imprint we're doing. We're calling it Leafwood Heritage. It's still a Leafwood book, but the Leafwood Heritage signifies that it's really focused toward Churches of Christ and the Stone Campbell heritage. But this book will be a collection of 20 sermons, all from the Book of Psalms, by prominent preachers in the church. So, and then a chapter by Dave Bland on preaching from the Psalms. And so this will be a very fitting tribute to.
Now we'll have that one in May to sell.
Yes, you will. It'll be available here at the Pepperdine Bible Lectures in May.
And Lynn Anderson's book, we hope that one will be out. Mm-hmm. That's also on the Psalms, isn't it?
Yes. It'll be about praying the Psalms.
Yeah.
It'll be an unusual and very practical approach to how one can incorporate the Psalms into one's devotional life.
Well, let's close with talking about what's ahead for Leonard Allen. With your wife being so happy at John Brown University and head of that department and getting Teacher of the Year and writing books – she's probably not going to want to move. So it sounds like your home is set in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. Yeah. Are you commuting? You must be burning up the highway between Siloam Springs and Abilene, Texas.
I do. I probably travel down every 4 to 6 weeks, spending 3 or 4 days at a time in Abilene.
Yeah.
Although with the growth of the press in the last 6 or 8 months, I've been going a little more often.
And how long a drive is that?
It's exactly 500 miles.
500 miles.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
So, I'm able to use the drive time as a sort of a little retreat, you know.
Yeah.
It's a personal retreat. That's good.
Do you ever play books on tape?
I do. Yeah, I do. And do a lot of thinking.
Well, looking ahead, you like what you're doing and we can expect you to continue to run both these presses?
For the foreseeable future, it's a big challenge, and it uses lots of creativity and a lot of things I bring to it. Not everything is fun, but it's endlessly challenging and rewarding.
Well, I'll close by saying thank you because as director of the Pepperdine Bible Lectures, you're my biggest bookseller. I look for all the new books you're bringing out each year through both of those imprints, and we sell a ton here in the first week in May. So I'm anticipating another great year this coming May, and I'm still doing a few more Bible lectures, so I hope you'll be here selling books. And we've enjoyed having you on campus yesterday, and we look forward to your lecture tonight, the 30th annual William Green Lecture, and we hope you'll keep coming back in the future.
Thanks, Jerry. It's a privilege to be here with you.
Good. We'll see you tonight.